And you've been doing a lot of thinking. You've been in this place of should you stay or should you go in this relationship for probably a long time. And when you're in that position of should you stay or should you go, you know, what you do is you end up being like an attorney and you start building your case. You start mounting your evidence. So I don't know about you, but I know a lot of clients, how that looks for them is they start tracking things. They're in their phone and they're like, you know, have a running note in their phone of everything that's been going on and what time somebody came home and what time they left and how many drinks you saw them have at dinner and how many bottles of alcohol they bought or the thing they said to you that one night that you were like, wow, I can't believe they actually talked to me that way. Or maybe you're videoing them and you're watching them deal with the kids and you're like, well, surely now that's enough evidence for me to go because I've never seen him act that way before. Or maybe you're mounting evidence like you're running around the house and marking bottles with markers. And you're trying to see how long does it take somebody to get through this? Or you find strange pills on the floor and you're like, what is that? And you start Googling and doing reverse image and try to look up what that medication is. And is that a medication of theirs? Or is that a drug they're taking that you don't know about? And you drive yourself crazy with all this mounting of evidence. And I know you know what I'm talking about, right? There's never enough evidence for some reason. But finally, let's say there is enough evidence, you know, all of those things together in a court of law, you know, you built your case out and you wrote everything down and by God, they're guilty. And what that means is you're justified finally in leaving this addicted, toxic, narcissistic, horrifying relationship that you're in. And you're like, that's it. I'm out. I've mounted all the evidence, except that as soon as you get to that point where you're finally ready to go, that creep up inside of your belly, that gnawing, that hole in your abdomen that leads to your heart, that rises all the way to your head, that goes, you're a bad person. Now, it might have a lot of different voices. And in fact, I know it does have a lot of different voices. But what I'm talking about with you is the guilt that you feel the minute you make a decision to put yourself first. The minute you make a decision to take care of yourself, the guilt seeps in. And that, my friend, is not okay. So tonight, what I'm going to do in this episode with you is I'm going to walk you through the way guilt talks to you, how it lies to you, how it manipulates you, the things that it says to you, and then I'm going to speak truth into those lies instead. I'm going to teach you how to think differently tonight because I know for one thing for sure, if you want the quality of your life to change, you've got to be willing to rebel against the programming that you have that's codependent that you don't even know is there. Now, I know every time I say codependency, you're like, I'm not codependent. I'm not a needy person. Oh my God, I'm amazing. I run companies. I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm not codependent. And we have a really weird idea of what codependency is, that it's this needy, weak person. And it really couldn't be further from the truth. Some of the strongest people I know are codependent. And so we're going to get to the bottom of that tonight. Now, if you're new here, I do want to take a minute and say welcome home. If you're watching now, you're watching us tape our podcast, Addiction, Codependency, and Toxic Relationship Recovery, live, which I do on Wednesday nights. And I'm so glad you're here. If you want to go ahead and put your comments in or your questions, I will get to them as we go on. And I'll be able to be with you guys and answer your questions as we go. So I also want to tell you that this episode is brought to you by myself, Heidi Rain. And over at HeidiRain.com, I've dedicated a whole lifetime of study to figure out how to help you navigate the addict or alcoholic in your life and break free from the codependency for good and heal from the toxic relationship shrapnel that has resulted from being a victim in somebody else's internal war. And I want to help you heal. And you can go over to HeidiRain.com at any time and check out our resources. So what are we going to do tonight? If you hear that in the background, my daughter's running wild. You might hear her, which is so cute. So here's what I want to do. I want to go through what guilt is, where it originates, where it comes from, and how to break free from it. And I'm going to say it in a way that is like, are you in my head? I love when you ask me that, by the way. I love when you send me emails or you're like, girl, I have never had anybody in my life think for me or think what I'm thinking out loud for me the way that you do. And I'm really able to do that because I know this thing. You know, I've dedicated my whole life to studying it and helping people break free from it. So whenever that guilt sets in, it sets you back. Right? Because you get to that point in your life where you're like, well, you're the lawyer, you're like, you know, mounting the evidence, building your case and your phone notes, going through and scrolling. But then the guilt sets in and you go back to square one. And then what you end up doing is, oh, now I've got to build what? A whole nother case. And so how's that been for you? How many times have you made a decision like that's it, like a holy moment with yourself, right? You thought it was your come to Jesus moment. You was at your crossroads and then you talked yourself out of it. How does that happen? Well, it happens because of the lies that we believe when we are about to take a stand for ourselves. And by the way, it is not your fault. These lies are programs that have been indoctrinated into you that you believe to be true. So again, this calls for a rebellion. You've got to rebel against the lies that are told within. So are you ready? Are you ready to dig into the lies we're telling ourselves? I know I am. I wrote them down for you. I'm going to tell you the lie. Then I'm going to tell you the truth, okay, to set you free. I'm going to teach you how to think differently so that you can rebel against these lies when they come up for you and then help you break free for good. Are you ready to go? Let's friggin' go. Let's do the damn thing. All right. Now, I don't have all of the lies that you tell yourselves. In fact, you probably want to put them in the chat or drop them or send me a message and tell me some other lies you're thinking of. And at the end, I'll read through the comments and see if we can come up with some more lies. But these are the ones I hear all the time. All right, you get in that position. You're ready to go. You're ready to leave. You finally have enough evidence. And then all of a sudden, the first lie is, I'm a bad person. Now, it can sound like a million different things. A good wife doesn't leave her husband. A good Christian wouldn't do this. I must be a bad mother if I'm going to leave their father. I must be a bad husband if I can't see my wife through this. I must not be enough of a person. Bad or enough kind of work together in this scenario. So you're telling yourself, you know, I'm a bad person. So if you believe that, if you're like, okay, well, bad people, so you must be believing bad people leave addicted people, right? Now, where you might have heard this before. This really isn't your fault because I'm going to tell you what happens here. There's a thing that I talk about all the time that I call toxic compassion. You might have heard others call it toxic empathy or even toxic compassion. But what it means is especially in our country, and I help people from all around the world. I have clients in South Africa and Europe and just everywhere you can possibly imagine. And this is a common theme. There is so much compassion for the addict or alcoholic. You know, all the things that we say, like, well, it's not really their fault. It's a disease. You know, they didn't want to be this way. They didn't ask for this life. You know, all the things that we tell ourselves. And because we believe those things, we have this toxic compassion for the person. And we go, well, I must be an asshole if I'm going to leave somebody that has a disease. I must be a bad person if I'm going to leave somebody at their absolute worst. I must be a bad person if I'm going to abandon them. Here's what you need to know that's true. When you're in a relationship with an addict or an alcoholic, when you're believing that this is some random thing that has come upon them, like they live their whole entire lives absolutely being a stellar human being and they're a rock solid person, and then all of a sudden they become an addict because it's like cancer and you wake up one day and you have it. That's not how this thing works. That's not how this thing works at all. In fact, every single human being on the planet has the addiction gene. All of us have it. It's like when Oprah was like, you get a car and you get a car. Hey, you have the gene. You have the gene. You have the gene. Everybody has the propensity to be addicted. What are you addicted to right now? You're addicted to your phone. you're addicted to maybe shopping or eating or checking out or sleeping or over-medicating or over-functioning. Everybody in the universe is addicted to something. But some people pick heroin. Some people pick alcohol. Some people pick cocaine. Some people pick these other things. So how did you get addicted to your phone? How did you get addicted to shopping? How did you get addicted to overeating? How did you get addicted to these things? It's because you trained yourself into addiction, whatever addiction you happen to be wrestling with. And codependency, by the way, is an addiction. And they trained themselves into addiction as well. So to just believe this lie that they just woke up addicted, that would make you feel like a really terrible person. I get it. But that's not the case. This person, 50% of people who are addicted have it in their family tree, and 50% of people that are addicted don't have it in their family at all. It's not like they're an alcoholic because their grandpa was, and now you're leaving them because they got the genetic, you know, loser ticket. That's not what this thing is. So when you don't understand addiction, then you start to build your house of lies on this foundation that's a lie itself, that addiction is nobody's fault. Addiction is a training program that somebody uses to cope. The other thing is you tell yourself, I'm a bad person, Heidi, because I'm leaving them. And you know what? They're an addict because they were traumatized. And here I am, you know, they told me all the things that happened to them, all the trauma that happened to them. And now I'm an asshole because I'm going to leave them. And they got here because of that trauma. And now I'm going to traumatize them and leave them. What kind of person am I? Is this ringing a bell? Trauma doesn't create addiction. I know Gabor Mate says it does. He writes books about how trauma and the trauma addiction connection, but trauma, you have two twins that grow up in a traumatic household. All right. Two twin girls. They have an alcoholic dad who's, you know, sideways every night, absolutely cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, inappropriate, yelling and screaming, rageful person, and a mom who's like bipolar or borderline or narcissistic, like so many of my clients. And she's like taking her love away and giving her love and taking it away and calling you names and making you feel like a bad person or pulling your hair around the room or all these things that I hear all the time, okay, about how we grow up or grew up, especially my generation. This is like, you know, it's too common, okay? And this person grows up in that environment and they barely make it, man. You know, they become an alcoholic. They become a prostitute. They become a degenerate. They can't hold down work. They fail in their relationships. They get used and abused and hurt and all terrible things happen to them. And if you meet that person on the street, and you're befriending them or you're in a relationship with them, you're going to be like, oh my God, what happened to you? You know, what happened to you? And they're going to tell you. They're going to tell you all the trauma. They're going to say all the things. And they're going to say, well, this is what happened. And this is why I am the way I am, because I grew up this way and nobody ever loved me. And so now I'm here. And thank God you're here with me because you're the only person that loves me and gets me because everyone hates me and I suck and I have nobody in my life but you. Nobody I can count on but you. Thank God you're here. I've been used and abused my whole life and you're going to be my savior. And you buy into it. And you're like, well, that sounds about right. I know I'm a good person. Amen, right? I'm going to get in there and help this person. But the other sister, who's a twin, grows up in that same environment. Dad's a rageful alcoholic, out to lunch, hurting them, hurling insults, unpredictable. I don't know if he's going to come home or not. Mom is off the rails, pulling the hair, yelling obscenities, telling her she's a whore. You know, she's 7 years old. She doesn't even know what sex is. And her mom's like telling her she's going to get pregnant. You know, I mean, it's crazy, right? She goes up in the same environment and she grows up and she becomes an entrepreneur. She owns her own business. She helps people. She has a platform where she talks to people and helps them change their lives. She's married to a highly functioning human being who loves and supports her and adores her. And she has a family and she's a great mother. And this one over here abandoned her kids. And when you ask her why, she'll say, I have a bunch of kids, but you know, their mom took them. They hate me. Nobody understands me. Their mom won't let me see them, you know, because it's a blame game. But this one has her children and raising them and happy. And And you run into this woman one day and you see her at a book signing and you're like, wow, man, how did you get here to this life? Like, how are you this way? And she says, it's the way I grew up. I grew up with an alcoholic, so I vowed I'm never going to drink. I never knew love, so I decided it was up to me to learn how to have the love that I really deserved. I realized the rescue squad wasn't coming, honey, and I had to take it on myself, and I had to be the one to step up for myself. I saw my dad and mom fight and jump on cars and chase each other around and run each other over, and I said to myself, I'm never going to have that happen. So I married somebody who's emotionally, financially, physically stable. Spiritually stable. Okay. What I'm trying to say is trauma doesn't create addiction. The coping mechanism to trauma creates the addiction. This one used alcohol and drugs to cope with the trauma, and this one used self-development. Okay. That's the only difference. They have the same trauma. We all have the same trauma. Some of us become high achievers and some of us become low losers, and that's how it works. But we're all traumatized. Okay. So what's the path out? If you say, okay, well, I'm not going to believe that I'm a bad person because I'm leaving them in their trauma. Well, Heidi, help me. Tell me something that's more true that I'm a bad person. Tell me something more true so that I can stand on it and it sounds right to me. All right, are you ready? The only way out of that trauma is the way this twin took, the way the successful twin took. You're not going to reach down into hell and pull this person and claw. But the only way this person, this twin, is going to get from point A to point B and meet their other twin on the platform is if they crawl, scratch, and maneuver, and strategize, and recover their own way there. You're not going to get them there. You're not going to say the magic thing that's going to help them get there. You're not going to do the magic thing that's going to help them get there. The only way they're going to get there is from the inside, not from you. So you're not a bad person for letting them go. You are an unqualified person. You're ill-equipped. So we're going to change the language. When you find yourself at nighttime going, I'm a bad person. I'm a bad person. Oh my God, how could I leave this person at their worst? You say, well, this person's never going to get better unless they have the right people around them and they do it within themselves. So I'm ill-equipped. I can't help this person. Because if I could, I would have already. And they'd already be sober, right? The other thing you can tell yourself is, a good person does the right thing. Is that accurate, right? Like we would say, okay, a good person does the right thing. The right thing is to release somebody so that they can get busy on getting their shit together. Not you trying to get their shit together for them all the time, over and over and over again. It's like if you had a handicapped child, it's the same concept. If you had a physically handicapped child, and I know that this is like, you know, we think of this Nick Vilichek. I don't know his name, but he has no arms and no legs. And I think his book is called No Arms and No Legs, right? And he was born this way. And of course, the loving family that he has could have been like, let me do everything for you. You know, you can't do anything yourself. I can only save you. This poor baby, look at him. He's helpless. He can't do anything. But they didn't do that. He had to learn how to do it for himself and find the will within him to get there and to make it happen. And today he's married and has children and does amazing things. When you look at an addict and you pity them, you're holding them a prisoner. They don't need pity. They need your belief in them. An addict doesn't need your pity. They need your belief. And it looks like this. I know you can do this, but I can't help you do it. I know you can get better, but you can't get better in this relationship. I know you can get better, but I can't wait. I know you can get better, but I can't be hurt while you're getting better. I know you can get better and I believe in you. And I know that I'm delusional to think that I can fix this for you. That's being a good person. So stop telling yourself you're a bad person. You're not a bad person. You're a smart person. And a smart person knows when to hold them, when to fold them, when to walk away, and when to run. Okay? This goes into the next thing. I'm a bad Christian. Oh my God. No pun intended. Adios mio. I could go on and on about this. Like, I'm a bad Christian because if you go to church, you might even hear that. You might gear up. You might have all your, like, pray to Jesus, and God himself, the Holy Father, came down and said, get out of this thing. And you go to church and tell your church friends, and you're like, you know what? God told me I should leave. And they're like, God would never tell you to leave. You got to pick up your cross and follow him. You got to pick up your cross. God would never tell you to leave somebody in the depths of their addiction and destruction. God wants you to be there fully present. Jesus will give you the strength to go in there and have another punch in the face. Jesus will give you the strength to just make it through another 24 hours of sure hell. Count on Jesus. Count your blessings. Could be worse. They could be dead. I mean, I could go on and on, and I get so fucking mad about this, because the reality is God did not call you to be abused. God did not put you in a situation to be hurt repeatedly, to question your sanity, to constantly be in a situation where you feel used, abused, anxious, frustrated. Well, maybe God did call me to that place so I can rely on God to be my Prince of Peace in the middle of the storm. Bullshit. No. 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 That is not a loving God. That's a narcissistic God. And God's not a narcissist. God does not make people suffer so he can make them better people. God does not want you to go through hell so you can prove how much you love him. That sounds like a narcissist. That sounds like an ex-husband. That sounds like a narcissist you got away from. I mean, if that's God, we're in trouble. Okay? We're in trouble. God wants you to fulfill your ultimate potential in this life, your ultimate happiness, your ultimate destiny, your ultimate, which is you just becoming the most of you that you can possibly become. It doesn't, an oak tree doesn't, like an acorn doesn't sit there and like think, you know, worry about what it's going to become. It knows it has everything in it. And it becomes an acorn and an oak tree, and it grows. And that's you. You're an acorn. You're an oak. You're the same thing. But then we get delusional and we're like, well, maybe I'm not an oak tree. Maybe I'm a willow. Maybe I'm a spider. Maybe I'm a snake. You know, we like confuse ourselves with what our purpose here is. Your purpose is to focus on yourself. Your purpose is to figure out what God has called in your life. And I guarantee you, it's not to suffer. God has called you to prosper. God has called you to be fulfilled. God has called you to never put a calling in your heart you can't fulfill. Why would he be so sick to put you in a situation where you have to watch somebody hurt themselves and hurt you on a daily basis? What kind of God would do that? I'm going to tell you, a narcissistic God. And that's a problem in our society has, that the picture of God we have now is that God's a narcissist. You are not called to suffer. What you do need to realize is that you're not the savior. You're not the savior of other people, right? You can only save yourself. That's the lesson. When we talk about picking up the cross, or if you're Christian and you understand what that analogy is, the metaphor of, you know, your own cross, and 9 times out of 10, what that means is lay it down, let it go, give it over. Don't play God, give it to God. Don't try to be God, let God be in the person, and God with that person, let them do it together. Okay. This one's terrible. This next one, I just want to say, and by the way, if you're getting something out of this, please, I know, make sure that you leave a comment, you like the video, you tell us about it, because, you know, I have a big, very big mission. I want to impact as many people as possible with helping them break free from this pattern. The reality is that there is help for addicts and alcoholics everywhere. There's a treatment center every 5 minutes. I live in South Florida. There are like 3,500 meetings from Miami to West Palm Beach a day. It's insane the amount of help. But where do you go? Where do you go for help? Where's your help? Where's the spouse's help? Where's the adult children of alcoholics help? Yeah, there's a couple meetings or groups you can go to. And I'm going to say something else a little controversial. I'm happy for you if Al-Anon works. I think that's so amazing. I'm happy for you, but I'm going to tell you what most of my people say to me when they come with me. When you think about Al-Anon and you look around that room and you go into that meeting and you see people that have been there for 20 fucking years talking about how they're handling and dealing with the alcoholic in their life. And they're like, well, Shirley, he was drunk again, but I just stayed in my lane and I just didn't, you know, I'm not trying to mock anybody. I'm saying this is the reality of the situation. All right. And then you go in and you complain and you cry and you unload like a therapy session to a peer about how bad it is, all that does is gear you up to go back in. It's like you go in there full of bullets, okay, full of bullets. You go into the Al-Anon meeting, you're like, look at my bullets. And everybody's like, oh my God, you got a bullet here. Shit, man, you got a bullet there. Let's get these bullets out. They can half-ass pull the bullets out because they're not doctors. They're like half-ass pulling the bullets out and they're like taping you up with Band-Aids and shit and putting stuff on you and trying to make you better. And you're like, okay, I feel a little better. I'll go back in for some more. I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in teaching you how to tolerate more shit. I'm not interested in teaching you how to be a better taker of abuse. I'm not teaching you how to get punched and get back up again. I'm teaching you how to duck and fucking weave and get out of Dodge. Because the truth is, it's not how many times you get up. It's how many times you avoid getting knocked down. Okay? The smart people know the path, know the trail, know how to go. You know what this is? So much of this is like proving energy. Like you have something to prove. We're going into Al-Anon. We're like proving how much of a saint I am, how much I can put up with. I'm a martyr at this point. And I'm like, oh God, look at the sacrifices I've made in my life. My whole life is gone. But you know, my alcoholic and my addict, you know, we start to claim this whole identity. And what ends up happening is you're getting off on being the victim in this situation. And it's like, who has it worse? Not okay. Not for me. Maybe for other people. Look, if you love Al-Anon, you're probably not here. You're probably in Al-Anon for 22 years. Or you're at the end of your Al-Anon journey and you're like, what? I need something else because I don't want to learn how to deal with this anymore. I don't want to learn how to be detached. I don't want to learn how to lovingly detach and go to my room and sit there when they're getting drunk and not have to put up with it. I want something to change. Don't you? I want something to change. Something has to change. Something has to change because my love, you are not built for this. You were not created for this. You weren't. You don't have anything to prove. You don't have to prove how much you can put up with. You don't have to prove how strong you are. You don't have to prove how lovable you are because you and I both know that when you're with an addict and alcoholic, your primary question is, why won't you pick me? Why won't you pick me? It's not about picking. You are wonderful. You are beautiful. You are amazing. You are smart. You are divine. You have nothing to prove. Now what? You're enough and they're still an alcoholic. Now what? You're a good person. They would be lucky to have you and they're still an alcoholic. Now what? You gave them a beautiful life. You provided a beautiful home. You made the $1 million. You did all the things and they're still an alcoholic, but you have nothing to prove. Now what? That's a new way to think about it. This one's scary. The next one. Okay. Sometimes you get in a situation with an addict or an alcoholic and they scare the shit out of you because they tell you that if you leave, they'll hurt themselves. Who's had that happen before, right? They threaten to hurt themselves, unalive themselves. They have all these different things. Or if they don't do that directly, you feel the vibe is if I go, something bad will happen. They will hurt themselves. I must protect them. I must be here to watch them. I must be here to watch them with the kids because and that's a fear you have too. You have a guilt like, well, I'm going to divorce them and then I have to have the kids see them every other week. Like what the hell? So this is all okay, we're going to get there. But for this first thing of thinking about they're going to hurt themselves, if you are with somebody who says to you when you're trying to end a relationship that they are going to hurt themselves and you're on the phone with them or you're in person with them, I want you to abruptly end the conversation this way. You know what? It sounds like this is beyond my scope and realm. I'm going to go ahead and call the mobile crisis unit and I'm going to have them come over and assess you because this is not okay and I'm not equipped. That's it. That's it. Or you say, should I call an ambulance and drive you to the mental hospital? Are you going to hurt yourself? Sounds like you're going to hurt yourself. When somebody threatens that, you have to be willing to say, then I'm going to call the mobile crisis unit, or I'm going to call the police, the non-emergency line, have them come check on you. Let's get a wellness check, or I'm going to drive you to the psychiatric hospital. That's what you do. You don't think, well, maybe I should sit down next with you and have dinner because then you won't hurt yourself. If somebody's going to hurt themselves, they're going to do that whether you're there or not. And 9 times out of 10, it's a manipulation tactic to get you to stay. But let's pretend it's not a manipulation tactic. Then you should be taking them to the mobile crisis unit or to the psych hospital anyway. You shouldn't be the one handling that. You cannot be held hostage by somebody's threats to hurt themselves, but you should be able to sleep at night by delegating it out, making the right call, doing the thing that you need to do to feel really good, like they're going to hurt themselves. I had a client the other day in this situation where they were texting and it got really terrible. And if you don't talk to me and you need to talk to me, and if you don't, da 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 da, that's not my, I can't handle that. I need to call her family or whoever else and send them over and say she's suicidal. She's not well. She's not talking right. You guys got to check on her. I'm ill-equipped. You're not the treatment center. You're not the psychiatrist. You're not the suicide prevention hotline. You're none of those things. But in a situation like that, that is what somebody needs. It's a crisis interventionist. It's a counselor. It's a therapist. It's a psychiatrist. It's not you. And by the way, even if you are a psychiatrist, it's still not you. And how do I know that? Because I work with a lot of clients that are, in fact, psychiatrists and psychologists. And I'm going to tell you, they know they're ill-equipped because it's a manipulation tactic anyway. Okay. But even so, you should take it seriously. No matter what, you should always take it seriously when somebody talks that way and immediately say, okay, I'm going to put you in the right place. One of the things you have guilt about is you think, I'm going to leave them and they're going to get it together and somebody else is going to live the life that I always wanted. They're going to get sober. I'm going to leave. And all of a sudden, they're going to marry. They're going to meet somebody else. They're going to get it all together. They're going to have this amazing life. This person's going to fall in love. They're going to become the person I always knew they could. And I'm going to miss out. And then my kids are going to see this like happy family. And like, I'm over here and I miss it now because I was so selfish. Like I was still only thinking about myself, but here they are. They did get it together. I mean, all the things. The reality is there's not a person that's going to be the thing, the catalyst that changes. I guarantee you this person is going to get into another relationship if they leave you and don't go on like a year sabbatical by themselves, just figuring out their lives. You know, they're going to end up getting into another relationship and just gaslight the hell out of that person until they can't take it anymore. And the lights go back on for them too. All they're doing is just trying to make a seeing person blind. And that's what a gaslight is. It makes a seeing person full of light living in the dark. And they don't even know how they got there. You were smart when you started, and now you're like questioning your own sanity. That's what addiction does. By the way, if you want help, go over to HeidiRain.com and check out our courses that we have, our self-study courses, schedule a consultation or an intervention, and we'll be able to help you. You know, there's so many. I wrote so many down. You know, I created this. I used with them. I was partier with them. I created this scenario. We were partying in our 20s and now I stopped when we started having kids, but they kept going and now I'm guilty because I was like on the train with them in the beginning, you know, all the things. And the reality is, so what that you started with them? So what? You stopped. You know what I mean? Like, amen. Okay. I really want to do this last one and then I'm going to read some of your comments. Because this is the biggest one that you tell yourself. If you are in a family or younger family, you say to yourself, my children deserve a dad or my children deserve a mom. That's what you say. So there's some version of I need to stay together for the kids. Okay. My kids deserve a mom or deserve a dad. While it is true that that would be great, they deserve a mom or they deserve a dad. So what are we saying they deserve? What is a dad? What is a dad? You know, like if I asked you that, I say, hey, what's a dad? You thought about it in your head and you're like, oh, a provider, somebody stable, a confidant, you know, a leader, a provider, a secure person. You know, a dad is a comforter, a dad is a supporter, a dad is an encourager. Okay. All right. What's a mom? Well, mom is a supporter, a mom's an encourager, a mom's a caretaker, a mom's a believer, a mom's a confidant, a mom's a, you know, a trustworthy person, a mom's all these things. And isn't that wonderful? You know, we have these ideas and images of a mom and a dad, but unfortunately you don't fucking have one of those. You don't have one of those. You have a Rick. you have a gym, you have an alcoholic, that some days, or you have an addict, you have a Susan, you have some days that they are firing on most cylinders, and the rest of the time they're out to lunch, they're in the garage, they're falling asleep, they're up in their bed, they're ignoring the children, they're driving drunk, they're saying hurtful things, they're flipping out over homework, they're throwing cold spaghetti at them, they're roughhousing and being inappropriate, they are cursing at them and saying weird things, they are ignoring them, they are short-tempered with them, they are watching you fight with them, they are watching them lose their shit, they watch them face plant in the front yard, they watch them get in the car and drive drunk, they watch, they're paranoid in the back. That's who they have. So when we ask ourselves, when we say to ourselves, my children deserve a dad, a better question is, do they deserve an alcoholic? My children deserve a mother. Do your children deserve an addict? You don't get to split and say, well, sometimes my kids have a mom and sometimes they have an alcoholic. They always have an alcoholic that sometimes gets their shit together to play and pretend they're a mom. I used to get women in treatment when I worked at a treatment center. I spent about 10 years inside. Deep breath here. Yes. I worked inside of a drug and alcohol treatment center for about 10 years. I ran, I built the family program, ran the family program there, all of the codependency classes and healthy relationship classes. And I would have clients come in all the time. And, you know, 90 days would be the recommended for anybody, right? Like a 90-day minimum stay in treatment is just the beginning. Treatment's not where people go to get sober. It's where they start to sober up, okay, and get on recovery. That, like, I'm going to talk about myths about recovery and what it's supposed to look like next week with you, just again, because it's so important. But let me just say that I'd always get a mother that would say, she'd be in our groups and we'd be sitting around, and one of the mothers would say, well, I just need to get the hell out of here. You know, I've got four kids at home and they need their mother, you know, they need their mom. And I, you know, I can't, and I just need to get home to them. So I know you're telling me I need to stay longer and I need more treatment, but I've got to be a mom. I've got to get home. And I would look at that woman in her face and I would go, what kind of a mother do you think you've been? What kind of mothering do you think you've provided or can provide from this state for your children? What are you thinking? What are you thinking a mother is right now? Because they don't need you to get home and drive drunk with them in the car. They don't need to get home and wonder and worry and listen to fear that you're going to relapse every Tuesday. They don't need you to come home and like check the trash can and see if there's beer cans in it. They don't need you to come home and like have to like worry if you're going to have to breathe in your breathalyzer. Like, fucking take your time. It's fine. Trust me. Your kids, if I could call them on the phone right now and ask them and say, hey, do you want your mom to come home? Do you know what your children would say with the torture you put them through? They say, oh my God, no, keep her. I got to get home to my husband. You know what your husband's telling me? Your husband's telling me he's sleeping for the first time that he's ever slept in 10 years because you're in treatment. He doesn't need you home. Will you want to torture him more with anxiety because you're coming out too early? This is real. The real conversations that I would have. Now, I don't want you to think that I would come from this venomous place, because comes from a loving place. You know, love is truth. You know, love is reality. You know, manipulation is delusion. Hatred is manipulation. So this place that I would be coming from was red hot truth, white hot truth, just coming at somebody, and it would pierce them in the heart so that they would go, holy shit, you're right, and stay. And maybe, just maybe, if they stayed in treatment and didn't rush home to be a mom or rush home to be a wife or rush home to make money and be a husband, just maybe that family would have a shot at having a mom or a dad or a husband or a wife. Okay, let's take a deep breath. I'm going to read some of these comments and let's see what everybody has to say. Thank you. So relatable. Never miss. That was to me. Yes. Thank you, Heidi. Yes. Yes. Let's go. You're in my head. Hearts, hearts. This is amazing. Yay. I'm glad. Yes. Change. I do not want to learn how to put up with it. Amen. Thank you for all you do, Heidi. I found you a couple of weeks ago here on YouTube, and it's given me the clarity of knowing I'm not crazy. I listen and cry because I feel seen and heard. And you know what, my love? That is the whole point. That is the whole point. You lay awake at night and you think to yourself, nobody could possibly understand what you're experiencing or going through. Nobody can possibly understand. They're all going to judge you if they knew what you were putting up with or what's really going on or all the things you see and have been through, that people would think you were crazy and they would judge you for what you're doing. They might. But the only judgment that counts is yours. It's the judgment you put on yourself. It's the things you say to yourself that you project into other people's heads. So tonight, hopefully, what we're doing is lessening that death grip that judgment has on you, where you can understand this is not your fault you're in this situation. The situation has come up for years or months or seasons or lifetimes of gaslighting and manipulation. You could have met this person when they were, you got blindsided, you had no idea what you were in for. And all of a sudden you're like, well, this isn't what I signed up for. Now I feel bad and feel guilty because I don't want this anymore. You're allowed not to want this. She's in constant fear. I am literally going through this right now. After I finally built the courage to file for divorce, lots of threats and welfare checks. Yes. It's so hard when they blame you, though. After 10 years, I did ask him to leave. It's like I struggle that I have so many unanswered questions and no closure. But while in active addiction, I can't ask him anything. I just get gaslit. Hello. Right? Maybe you'll get the answers when somebody's a year out. Okay. They're a year out. They're working their thing and they're realizing the impact they've had on you. Maybe. But now you're never going to get the closure. But that from them. You cannot go to the source of the pain to heal the pain. The sword cuts you. You cannot go to the sword and go explain yourself. Heidi's slap and soothe. Slap and soothe. Yes, the queen of slap and soothe, which is slap with reality and soothe with the love. Slap with the truth and soothe with the love. And the love is here. There is a choice that you have. You have a choice. You are not alone. You might feel like you're stuck, and I know that seems extremely real to you because you have finances. You have family, you have faith, you have all these things that are intertwined in your decision-making process. And I'm not asking you to watch a video or listen to a podcast and start a revolution in your household tonight. I'm not asking you to do that. What I am asking you to do is come to these episodes with a notebook and a pen and start writing some things down to look inside of yourself and make sense of some things. Now, if you want to speed up that process, get a self-study course. There's Toxic Relationship Recovery at HeidiRain.com. It's a 12 module course. You go at your own pace. It could take you 12 weeks, 12 months, take you as long as you want. And you go through it step by step to unravel this codependency programming, start to heal from the toxic patterns that have been laid, figure out should you stay or should you go inside of that course. That'll help you get crystal clear about that. It'll help you figure out your value and your worth and your North Star of what you need and want in your life and figure out if this person is going to be the person to give it to you or not. That self-study course is life-changing. We call it Life School. It stands for Love Yourself First Empowerment School, also known as Toxic Relationship Recovery and Codependency Recovery. Such a mouthful, but it's life-changing. You could start that course tonight. You can go get it right now and dive in and watch the first video. None of those videos are in this YouTube. None of that is inside of this. This is outreach, right? This is education on the problem. This is outreach to you to help touch as many people as I can, to define the issues, to talk about the problems. But if you want to break free, you need to make an investment in yourself. Take the course, take the time to go through the lessons and get the biggest journal you can lay your hands on and start to like clear some shit out. Or there's the addiction in the family course that has countless hours of coaching and content around guilt and gaslighting and stay or go and what is addiction and what is recovery. And I mean, you could watch that. You could get in that course tonight and have just months and months of just ministry in your mind of like what's going to be right for you. I've created all this for you. It already exists. Go grab it. Go get it. It's at HeidiRain.com. And if you want deeper, I can work with you one-on-one. I still have the bandwidth to do that, or we can come into a group. Here's the great news, guys. I'm actually reestablishing our group coaching container. We were on hiatus for a while, and I was just on hiatus because, you know, I just wanted to be on hiatus. I needed some time to regroup and restructure things a little bit. But the great news is within the next few months, I will be relaunching our coaching, and it's going to be on Saturdays. I know, hallelujah. But so because we have so many international clients, we have so many people from all around everywhere that we're going to do it on Saturdays. And so everybody can attend, and more details to come. If you want details on that, you can let me know and I'll be rolling that out as we come. And one of the great ways to make sure you never miss anything is to send me an email and let me know. You want to be in the loop about things. Once you purchase a course, you're always in the loop about everything. And if you want to come into the group coaching, having a course is a prerequisite to be able to come into the coaching, because I'm going to be referencing the coach, something in the course. It's, you know, I'm going to be saying, hey, go back and watch this module or that module. So you'll want to have those things. And if you want to get more than one course, you can email me and I'll create a special kind of bundle for you if you want to do that as well. Okay. Hopefully this has been helpful for you. It's been a beautiful experience for me just to commune with you and be with you tonight. I love you. I want you to have the love that you deserve and that you give everybody else. Wouldn't that be amazing for you just to have reflected back the love and the concern and the care that you pour out to everybody else on a daily basis, just to have that reflected back to you? Wouldn't that be amazing just to have somebody in your corner take a stand with you and support you through this? It's life-changing. I want to be that person for you. I love you. Take excellent care. And I'll see you next week, Wednesday night, for our live taping of our podcast. And this episode will drop, I think, in 1 week. I'll see you soon. Sleep well. And if you can't sleep well, journal some of these thoughts tonight and expel them so that you do sleep well. I'll see you soon. Love you so much. Bye-bye.